I drove for my life. Mac's car was an 89 Trans Am, pure white, with a big 8-cylinder engine. The speedometer goes to 130 miles an hour. In places, I went that fast. The falling rain made the roads dangerous at that speed I was driving, but I had plenty of incentive to keep the car moving as quickly as possible. I was still riding the steel-hard edge of anger that had carried me away from the ruins of my office and through Morgan. The sky grew darker, a combination of building banks of storm clouds in the approaching dusk. The lighting was strange, greenish, and the leaves of the trees, as I left the city, were standing out too sharply, too harshly, the yellow of the lines in the road too dim. Most of the cars I saw had their headlights on, and streetlights were clicking a light as I barreled down the highway. Fortunately, Sunday evening isn't a busy one as far as traffic goes. I'd have been dead any other night. I must also have been driving during the watch rotation for the highway patrol, because not one of them tried to pull me over. I tried to tune in the weather station on the radio, but gave it up. The storm, plus my own agitation, was creating a cloud of squealing feedback on the radio speakers, but nothing intelligent about the storm. I could only pray that I was going to get over to Lake Providence before it did. I won. The curtains of rain parted for me as I whipped past the city limit signs for Lake Providence. I hit the brakes to slow for the turn onto the lakefront road that led to the Sells house, started hydroplaning, turned to the slide with more composure and ability than I really should have had, and got the vehicle back under control in time to slide onto the correct road. I pulled into the Sells gravel driveway on the swampy little peninsula that stretched out into Lake Michigan. The Trans Am slid to a halt in a shower of gravel and a roar of the mighty engine, then sputtered and gasped to silence. I felt for a giddy second and a half like Magnum. Blue Beetle aside, I could get into this sports car thing. At least it lasted long enough for me to get to the Sells place. Thanks, Mac, I grunted and got out of the car. The gravel driveway leading back to the lake house was half sunken in water from the recent storms. My leg hurt me too much to run very fast, but I set off down the drive at a long-legged lope, rapidly eating the distance to the house. The storm loomed before me, rolling across the lake toward the shore. I could see columns of rain, dimly lit by the fading light, falling into its waters. I raced the storm to the house. As I did, I drew every bit of power and alertness that I could, keyed myself to a tighter level, tuned my senses to their sharpest pitch. I came to a halt 20 yards shy of the house and closed my eyes, panting. There could be magical traps or alarms strewn about, or spiritual or shrouded guardians invisible to the naked eye. There could be spells waiting, illusions meant to hide Victor Sells from anyone who came looking. I needed to be able to see past all that. I needed to have the edge of every scrap of knowledge I could get. So I opened my third eye. How can I explain what a wizard sees? It isn't something that lends itself readily to description. Describing something helps to define it, to give it limits, to set guardrails of understanding around it. Wizards have the sight since time began, and they still don't understand how it works, why it does what it does. The only thing that I can say is that I felt as though a veil of thick cloth had been lifted from me as I opened my eyes again. And not only from my eyes, but from all of my senses. I could abruptly smell the mud and the fish odor of the lake, the trees around the house, the fresh scent of the coming rain preceding the storm on the smoke-stained wind. I looked at the trees, saw them, not just the first green coat of spring, but in the full bloom of summer, the splendor of the fall and the barren desolation of winter, all at the same time. I saw the house, each separate part of it with its own component, the timbers as parts of spectral trees, the windows as pieces of distantly sandy shores. I could feel the heat of summer and the cold of winter in the wind coming off the lake. I saw the house wreathed in ghostly flames and knew that those were in at least part of its future, that fire lay down several of the many paths of possibility that lay ahead in the next hour. The house itself was a place of power. Dark emotions, greed, lust, hatred, all hung over its visible things. Molds and slimes that were strewn over it like Spanish moths with malevolent eyes. Ghostly things, restless spirits, moved around the place, drawn to the sense of fear, despair, and anger that hung over it. Mindless shades that were always to be found in such places, like rats in granaries. The other thing I saw over the house was a grinning, empty skull. Skulls were everywhere. Wherever I looked, just at the edge of my vision, silent and still and bleach white, as solid and real as though a fetishist had scattered them around in anticipation of some bizarre holiday. Death. Death lay in the house's future. Tangible, solid, unavoidable. Maybe mine. I shuddered and shoved the feeling away. No matter how strong the vision, how powerful the image gained with the sight, the future is always mutable. Always something that could be changed. No one had to die tonight. It didn't have to come to that. Not for them, and not for me. But a sick feeling had settled into me. As I looked on this darkling house, with all of its stinking lust and fear, all of its horrid hate worn openly upon it to my sight, like a mantle of flayed human skin on the shoulders of a pretty girl with gorgeous hair, luscious lips, sunken eyes, and rotting teeth. It repulsed me. And it made me afraid. And something about it, intangible, something I couldn't name, called to me, beckoned. Here was power. Power I had thrust aside once before, in the past. I had thrown away the only family I'd ever known to turn away power exactly like this. This was a sort of strength that could reach out and change the world to my will, bend it and shape it to my desiring, could cut through all the petty trivialities of law and civilization and impose order where there was none, guarantee my security, my position, my future. And what had been my reward for turning that power aside thus far? Suspicion and contempt from the very wizards I had acted to support and protect. Condemnation from the White Council, whose laws I had clung to when all the world had been laid at my feet. I could kill the Shadow Man, now, before he knew I was here. I could call down fury and flame on the house and kill everyone in it, not leave one stone upon another. I could reach out and embrace the dark energy he had gathered in this place, draw it in and use it for whatever I wanted and the consequences be damned. Why not kill him now? Violet light, visible to my sight, throbbed and pulsed inside the windows, power being gathered and prepared and shaped. The Shadow Man was inside, and he was gathering his might, preparing to unleash the spell that would kill me. What reason had I to let him go on breathing? I clenched my fists in fury, and I could feel the air crackle with tension as I prepared to destroy the lake house, the Shadow Man, and any of the pathetic underlings he had with him. With such power, I could cast my defiance at the council itself. The gathering of white-bearded old fools without foresight, without imagination, without vision. The council and that pathetic watchdog Morgan had no idea of the true depths of my strength. The energy was all there, gleeful within my anger, ready to reach out and reduce to ashes all that I hated and feared. The silver pentacle that had been my mother's burned cold on my chest, a sudden weight that made me gasp. I sagged forward a little and lifted my hand. My fingers were so tightly crushed into fists that it hurt to try to open them. My hand shook, wavering, and began to fall again. Then something strange happened. Another hand took mine. The hand was slim, the fingers long and delicate, feminine. The hand gently covered mine and lifted it, like a small child's, until I held my mother's pentacle in my grasp. I held it in my hand, felt its cool strength, its ordered and rational geometry. The five-pointed star within the circle was the ancient sign of white wizardry, the only remembrance of my mother. The cold strength of the pentacle gave me a chance and a moment to think again, to clear my head. I took deep breaths, struggling to see clear of the anger and hate and the deep lust that burned within me for vengeance and retribution. That wasn't what magic was for. That wasn't what magic did. Magic came from life itself. From the interaction of nature and the elements, from the energy of all living things, and especially of people. A man's magic demonstrates what sort of person he is, what is held most deeply inside of him. There is no truer gauge of a man's character in the way he employs his strength, his power. I was not a murderer. I was not like Victor Sells. I was Harry Blackstone Copperfield Dresden. I was a wizard. Wizards control their power. They don't let it control them. And wizards don't use magic to kill people. They use it to discover, to protect, to mend, to help, not to destroy. The anger abruptly evaporated. The burning hate subsided, leaving my head clear enough to think again. The pain in my leg settled into a dull ache, and I shivered in the wind and the first droplets of rain, miserable. I didn't have my staff, and I didn't have my rod. The trinkets I did have with me were either expended or burned to uselessness. All I had was what was inside of me. I looked up, suddenly feeling smaller and very alone. There was no one near me, no hand touching mine. No one stood close by. For just a moment, I thought I smelled a whiff of perfume, familiar and haunting. Then it was gone. And the only one I had to help me was myself. I drew out a breath. Well, Harry, I told myself, that's just going to have to be enough. And so I walked through the spectral landscape littered with skulls into the teeth of the coming storm, to a house covered in malevolent power, throbbing with savage and feral mystic strength. I walked forward to face a murderous opponent who had all the advantages, who stood prepared and willing to kill me from where he stood within the heart of his own destructive power, while I was armed with nothing more than my own skill and wit and experience. Do I have a great job or what?